Madam President.
Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant of Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Today's chaplain is Pastor Bill Helker from All Saints Lutheran Church in Cottage Grove. And following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I invite you to pray with me. Dear gracious God of all peoples, since the first moment that human beings looked up to the stars, feeling small and insignificant, we have struggled and striven to find meaning and purpose. In our quest for answers, we heard your voice, saw your fingerprints in the creation around us, felt your presence and spirit within us as well as outside of us. Through our various cultures and regions, we came to describe and name you in various ways. And yet, there are shared understandings of you that bridge the gaps of our differences and can serve to unite us in common mission. We pray this day for wisdom in discerning not just when, but how to listen to each other. We pray for our hearts to be filled with compassion, remembering that we are called to serve all people and not just those with whom we are affiliated. Throughout this day and in days to come, move us so that our words and deeds flow from a spirit of gratitude, respect, and humility. Finally, we give you thanks for the opportunity to be part of something greater than ourselves. Help us to trust that you walk with us all on our different paths, ahead of us to show us the way, behind us to encourage us, above us to watch over us, below us to lift us up, beside us to befriend us, and within us to give us your deep and abiding peace. In your name we pray. Amen.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Bach, Benson, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daly, DeKreif, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Fishbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Harrington, Hayden, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingebrigtsen, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Cruz, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Lori, Magnus, Marty, McGuire, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxhog, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stump, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vandeveer, Wieger, Wolf.
A quorum is present. Beginning with the second order of business, executive and official communications, there are several to make note of on page one of today's Senate agenda. The third order of business, messages from the House. Secretary Ludeman will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate files herewith returned. Senate file number 1993, relating to building codes. Senate file number 2014, relating to metropolitan government. Senate file 1981, relating to police officers. Senate file 2069, relating to insurance. Senate file 2084, relating to public safety. Senate file 1793, relating to insurance. Senate file 1860, relating to environment. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. The Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments and the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file number 1934, bill for an act relating to insurance. Senate file 1934 is herewith returned to the Senate. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Dames.
Madam President, I move that Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate file 1934 and that the bill be placed on repassage as amended.
Senator Dames, some explanation of that bill.
The changes in the bill, in our original bill that the Senate had, the House removed the language that related line 1.2, section 72A 201, It removed the portions on being a combination policy, and the description of the dwelling and the subdivisions was taken out, as it was felt that language was included in a shorter version in line 1.11. Also, the effective date was left the same, but there was an amendment put on that added that the bill does not apply to losses incurred before the date the policy becomes effective. So that would be the differences. And so we have agreed to concur with those differences.
Discussion to Senator Dames' motion. Senator Dames renews his motion that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 1934 and the bill be placed on its repassage as amended. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. The Secretary will give Senate File 1934 its third reading.
Senate File 1934, a bill for an act relating to insurance, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1934. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 44 ayes and 15 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under messages from the House, the secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which the amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate file number 2273, a bill for an act relating to public safety. Senate file number 2273 is herewith returned to the Senate. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam President. I would move that the Senate concur with the amendments by the House to Senate File 2273 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended. The difference in between the House and the Senate version, in the Senate version, we made a rule change on Part 7400.5300, subpoint 3, to remove the words "from Minnesota." What this bill intends to do is it allows salvage pools, insurance companies to sell cars or automobiles not only to licensed used car parts dealers, but also to licensed scrap metal dealers. And in the Senate version, what we did was we removed "from Minnesota," so they could have held a license from outstate, not from Minnesota, but a license from another state. And what the House file does is it keeps that rule intact as current law, so they would have to have a Minnesota license to buy these vehicles. And with that, members, I would urge your support.
Further discussion, Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam President. Pursuant to Rule 41.2, I wish to excuse myself from voting on Senate File 2273.
On that motion, on Senator Miller's motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Further discussion on Senator Howe's motion. Seeing none, Senator Howe renews his motion that the Senate concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 2273 and that the bill be placed on its repassage as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Secretary will give Senate File 2273 its third reading.
Senate File Number 2273, a bill for an act relating to public safety, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 2273. All those senators having voted that desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 59 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under messages from the House, the secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House files. Herewith transmitted, House files number 1976, 2216, 2949, 1134, and 2335. Albany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. Moving to the fourth order of business, the first reading of House bills. They are printed on page 3 of today's Senate agenda. First reading, and they are referred as indicated. Fifth order of business, reports of committee. Senator Senchum.
Madam President, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills. They are printed on page 4 of today's Senate agenda, second reading. Moving to the eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's Senate bill introductions. They will be referred as indicated, first reading. Under motions and resolutions, there is one author's motions printed on page 4. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Perry.
Madam President, I move that Senate File 702 be withdrawn from the Committee on Taxes and returned to its author. And I am the author.
Thank you, Senator Perry. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move pursuant to Rule 26 that the bills designated on the sheet related to special orders on your desk be now made appropriate for immediate consideration.
Senator Senjum has designated those Senate files or those bills printed on today's special orders as special orders. If you don't have one on your desk, they are available here in the front. The first bill under consideration is number 108 on General Orders Calendar, Senate File 1553, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 1553 is a bill that authorizes the Board of Dentistry to grant temporary permits to dentists and dental hygienists from another state who come to Minnesota to provide care on a voluntary basis without compensation. And the board determines that the applicant's service will provide care to the residents who have barriers to obtaining dental care, and the applicant provides adequate proof of an active license to practice in another state. The permit shall be good for a period of not to exceed 10 days in a year and may be renewed. The permits expire on December 31st of each year. The board may not charge a fee for the permit and or require the applicant to pass an examination on state statutes and rules. The holder of the permit is subject to the state laws and rules regarding dentistry and the regulatory authority of the board. Members, this comes from the Mission of Mercy, where dentists around the state gather this year. The first year in Minnesota, they'll gather in Mankato at the Verizon Center. Dentists and hygienists and dental workers from around the state come and provide care to those folks that might not otherwise be able to get dental care. The reason for this bill is that we have folks that some dentists and hygienists come from other states. Some come to help us set up our program in Minnesota. We're the 18th state. Other dentists come in to learn about the program so they can go back to their state and set it up in their state. So I'd appreciate a green vote on this bill, members.
Further discussion of Senate File 1553. Secretary will give Senate File 1553 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1553, a bill for an act relating to health, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 60 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill under consideration is number 39 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 396, Senator Koch.
Thank you, Madam President and members. You have before you Senate File 396. Believe it or not, this small bill has taken 5 years, dozens of meetings, four iterations, and a task force to get before you. But here we have it today. And it's, I think, a very important bill. What this bill simply does is define horses, which are a direct economic impact to the state of Minnesota of $553 million and a total economic impact of almost $1 billion. A very important agricultural industry to the state of Minnesota are now officially defined for agricultural purposes as livestock. And so, members, I would appreciate a green vote and an avoidance of the puns that I'm sure are springing to your head. Thank you very much.
Further discussion on Senate File 396. Secretary will give Senate File 396 its third reading.
Senate File Number 396, a bill for an act relating to agriculture. Third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 396. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 55 ayes and 7 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill under consideration is number 9 on the general orders calendar, House File 2187, Senator DeCrife.
Thank you, Madam President. This is a bill that was brought to me by the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association. It's a bipartisan bill. Under current law, an automobile dealer may issue vehicle registration plates and stickers if they are permitted by the Department of Public Safety and equipped to use a computerized vehicle registration system. However, the plates and stickers may only be issued at the time of vehicle sale. This bill strikes a requirement that plates and stickers be issued at the time of sale. Also, under current law, an owner may have a lien released on the vehicle if the lien is at least 7 years old and they have it paid in full. If the owner is unable to locate the lien holder to obtain a lien release, they may have the lien released from the title if the lien holder fails to reply to a certified letter. This bill would allow automobile dealers to also seek a lien release if they are purchasing a vehicle with a lien from an individual owner.
Further discussion on House File 2187. Secretary will give House File 2187 its third reading.
House File Number 2187, a bill for an act relating to public safety. Third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 2187. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 61 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill under consideration is number 84 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 2306, Senator Koch.
Madam President and members, Senate File 2360 is a bill just to clean up a little bit of an issue we had with, during the budget debate and the shutdown last year. We redefined in the bills last year a definition of rural for the purposes of a loan forgiveness program. The loan forgiveness program, we forgive some student loans and ask that people go and serve and work in underserved areas. This bill before you today does not change the definition that we changed last year, but it simply changes the effective date because there were a total of seven people that had already signed contracts, already had agreements, the money's already been allocated, but because of the effective date, they were not, the Department of Health could not honor their commitment to these people. This just changes the effective date to grandfather those seven people in, and I'd appreciate a green vote on this. Thank you, members.
Madam President. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam President. I just wanted to comment that we do have a number of bills that come through the body to, besides the revisor's bill, to correct errors that are made in previous legislatures. And this is the problem if we decide to legislate in the Constitution, is when we want to make corrections because inevitably mistakes are made, it makes it much more difficult to do that.
Further discussion on Senate File 2360. Secretary will give Senate File 2360 its third reading.
Senate File Number 2360, a bill for an act relating to health, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 2360. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving to number 15 on the general orders calendar, House File 2128, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, House File 2128 is an emergency medical services regulatory bill, technical bill, and it relates to emergency medical personnel licensure. It also makes various changes to terminology commonly used in the EMSRB statutes, and it moves several current rules into statute and conforms to the federal education standards that became effective this year. In committee, Senate File 1883 was also amended onto the bill, and the amendment is clarifying language that allows additional time for some volunteers to submit their credit reporting notice. That was due to some mailing issues that happened for volunteer EMS workers. And that is a one-time correction, and future deadlines remain the same. I can outline some of the bigger parts of the bill. Most of the bill were just changes in terminology. Section 10 changes terminology and modifies the definition of an emergency medical responder to include an individual who is registered by the board to perform basic emergency skills before the arrival of a licensed ambulance service and is on the roster of the Minnesota Licensed Ambulance Service. Section 15 changes terminology and clarifies the curriculum developed by the education program coordinator in accordance with the national EMS education standards by the Highway Transportation Safety Administration, United States Department of Transportation. Section 18 permits a basic life support service medical director to authorize ambulance service personnel to use equipment that is within the licensure level of the ambulance service. Section 22 requires a licensee to have a written agreement with at least one neighboring licensed ambulance service for the pre-planned and organized response of emergency medical services. Subdivision 2A requires the equipment to be maintained in full operating condition and all patient care equipment, supplies, drugs stored and maintained with the manufacturer's recommendation. And then the following, there's some subdivisions that were that came from Minnesota Rules 4690. So for the most part, it just changes terminology and just brings into statute what is already in current rules. And then the one, Section 46 repeals Minnesota rules, and that has to do with the radio equipment required on all of the ambulances that's addressed in this bill. I'll stand for questions.
Further discussion, Senator Latz.
Madam President, will Senator Hoffman yield for a question?
Senator Hoffman will yield. Senator Latz.
Madam President, Senator Hoffman, why is there a need to change the terminology that you're referring to?
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Latz, some of the terminology that was used in the bill is obsolete, and we're just updating the terminology to conform with what the EMS services currently use. You know, it adds definitions to emergency medical responder group. It just brings it up to date from old language into the new new millennium.
Senator Latz.
So, Madam President, Senator Hoffman, if this were a constitutional provision, would you be able to update the terminology by statute?
Senator Hoffman?
I guess I didn't understand what he was asking me. If he could please rephrase or repeat.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, Senator Hoffman, if rather than the old terminology being in statute or were in the Minnesota Constitution, would you be able to bring this bill forward to change by statute the terminology that you're saying needs to be updated?
Senator Hoffman.
No, Senator Latz. Thank you, Madam President. No, Senator Latz, this language is not going into the Constitution. We're talking about a statute.
Further discussion on House File 2128. Secretary will give House File 2128 its third reading.
House File Number 2128, a bill for an act relating to health, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 2128. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. The next bill under consideration is number 88 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 2464. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, Senate File 2464 addresses a correction by the sex offender sentencing grid. This is a request by the Sentencing Guidelines Commission. Back in early March, the Sentencing Guidelines Commission discovered an error in their grid on sex offenders. Basically, when we passed the grid in 2006, traditional rounding methods were used, and instead of rounding down on some of these sentences, the traditional way of rounding would have been rounded up. This particular conclusion put us at odds with case law, namely a case called Blakely versus Washington. And what we've basically created is an enhanced sentencing as a result of it that no one really knew. Sentencing guidelines could make this correction, but it would take them a year and a half to make this adjustment. They've come to us to expedite the sentencing guidelines correction, and it's standing before us. I'll stand for any questions if there are any.
Further discussion on Senate File 2464, Senator Latz.
Madam President, will Senator Limmer yield to a question?
Senator Limmer will yield. Senator Latz.
Madam President, Senator Limmer, if this error were contained in the Constitution, could we correct it by passing a bill in statute form here in the legislature?
Senator Limmer.
Not sure if I understand the question, Senator Latz, or if you're trying to build a foundation for a future debate, but nevertheless, we're just making statute changes here today.
Senator Latz. Oh, I'm sorry. Further discussion on Senate File 2464. Secretary will give 2464 its third reading.
Senate File Number 2464, a bill for an act relating to public safety, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 2464. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill under consideration is number 33 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 1749, Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I present Senate File 1749 relating to DNR electronic licensing data access. In 2009, the Environment Omnibus Bill made DNR database, which had been previously public, completely private data because of a federal issue related to driver's license information. Our DNR database is no longer linked with driver's license information, and so we were requested to make the entire database public once again. In consultation with my co-authors and Senator Limmer going through the committee process, instead of making it completely public, we decided to focus on the business needs for making this information public. So for those businesses who had legitimate need for this information, we have drafted this legislation so that if you're focused on the normal course of your business, for example, if you own a storage locker and there's a boat or a snowmobile abandoned, this will help you find the owner of that snowmobile or boat. If you're acting in connection with any criminal, civil, administrative, or arbitration proceedings, for example, a bankruptcy, searching for assets, providing notice to the owners of towed or impounded recreational vehicles or watercraft, a boat left on a vacant lot and towed away, would be nice to find that owner, or use by an insurer, agent, or private investigator in the normal course of business. Right now, all of these entities do not have access, have to go through protracted processes in order to get this information. We are simply making life easier for these small business people, and I'd appreciate your questions and support.
Further discussion on Senate File 1749. Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Benson, I understand why you want to loosen up the access to the data. I'm not sure why it should be private for anyone. I think our data practices have been very good about having a standard that either data is public or private, and I'm really bothered by the fact that we're going to give it to some small businesses, some individuals, not others. And in terms of all the concerns about stalking, some of the worst cases of things happening with stalking, they hired private detectives to hunt down a person. I just think this violates our data practices rules that we've been doing for years, and I'd agree with you if we opened it up more and just made it the way the rest of the things are. Make it public data, because I think that's the way it ought to be handled. If you need a few exceptions for safety or something, do it that way. That's the way we used to do it for driver and vehicle things until the federal government stepped in and said we had to do it their way. Why we want to expand what the feds forced us to do in driver's licenses to DNR and everywhere else? I just don't think that's a good idea.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. Actually, and I have the document the DNR used to require you to fill out when the information was all public. And it was quite a process. The information wasn't just broadly available. They were trying to be respectful of having a specific need for this. And then the feds did come in and tighten up compliance. I think we have tried to balance the need for privacy with the need to access this data. And I'd appreciate your support.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, but Senator Benson, I mean, the fact that the department had a bad practice for how they were handling it doesn't mean we shouldn't fix the bad practice and make it public and then protect the specific needs for protection rather than say some people can get it and other people can't. That violates the very data practices policies we've had over the years.
Senator Benson. No. Further discussion on Senate File 1749. Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam President. Will Senator Benson yield for a question?
Senator Benson will yield. Senator Tomasoni.
Senator Benson, I'm just looking at the original bill as introduced, and it was a little tiny repealer, and now it's expanded quite a bit. Can you explain the reasons why?
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. This was initially a full repeal, making all data public. But through the process of listening to vested parties and the desire for privacy, we are trying to find a balance in this bill.
Senator Tomasoni.
Madam President, Senator Benson, one more question. Will you yield?
Senator Benson will yield. Senator Tomasoni.
I'm just curious, does this, and how does this relate to the data privacy laws that we have in the state? Is this can this get challenged, or can this be added to them? I mean, it seems to me we're giving out a real lot of information here, and I'm just wondering if there is precedence for this, or and if it's going to be a problem once it gets passed, and will it get challenged in court?
I believe Senator Limmer has something that he might want to add to that. Senator Limmer?
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Tomasoni, the language before you is a little bit of an influence that I had on the bill as it went through judiciary. To answer your question, this bill is modeled after the driver license and vehicle data that we currently have that is not available to just anyone coming in the door and asking to find out who the owner and where they would live. This is restricted to for specific business purposes or recalls on factory equipment. This is to protect the identity of owners so that not anyone can just follow you home and read the serial number off your boat and find out where you live and who you are.
Further discussion? Senator Benson, do you have anything else? Secretary will give Senate File 1749 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1749, a bill for an act relating to data practices, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 54 ayes and 10 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill under consideration today is number 16 on the general orders calendar, House File 2173, Senator Daley.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 2067 is a consumer protection bill, or House File 2173, I guess now. It's a consumer protection bill, and we're clarifying the definition of home solicitation sale. On line 1.8, you'll see members, we're adding five words, or improvements to real property, like if you're doing an addition to your home. The Better Business Bureau and the Department of Labor and Industry have received many complaints from homeowners who've signed contracts just to get salesmen who are employing high-pressure tactics to get them out of their home, thinking they could cancel the contract the next day. In some of those cases, the contractor has refused to allow the cancellation unless the homeowner paid a cancellation penalty, generally about 25% of the contract. This new law would apply only to situations where the contractor initiated the contact with the consumer. It's a nonpartisan consumer issue. The bill is supported by the Better Business Bureau, the Insurance Federation of Minnesota, and Minnesota Association for Exterior Specialists. And I want to thank Senator Metzen, Senator Kielash, Gazelka, and Lilly for their support in this bill. And I appreciate your support, members.
Further discussion, Senator Bonoff.
Madam President, I have the A1 amendment.
Senator Bonoff offers the A1 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Bonoff moves to amend House File Number 2173 as follows. Page 1 after line 4, insert. This is the A1 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Madam President. This amendment reflects a bill that relates to consumer protection as well. This is a bill that addresses the situation that many perhaps have heard about with regard to fraud, particularly pertaining to seniors. There's a prevalent practice that has been described as a young person calling a supposed grandparent and saying, "Grandma, Grandma, I'm in jail. I got in some trouble. I don't want Mom and Dad to know. Would you please send me bail?" And unfortunately, because grandmas are who they are, I know my mother would do the same for my children, these grandmas have been transmitting money to these young persons contacting them, and in fact, it has been found to be fraud most of the occasions. And so this bill was actually carried by Senator Scheid, and then we discovered mid-session that it was moving in the House and nobody was moving it in the Senate. And so I was asked to take it on
Originally, the bill had some much stronger language in it that caused it to be referred to judiciary, and by the time I got involved and adopted the House file language, which was much simpler, Commerce was no longer meeting, and that is why it did not go through the normal hearing process. But the amendment before you is very simple. It says that the money transmitter must provide a clear, concise, and conspicuous consumer fraud warning on all transmittal forms used by the consumers. It directs them to provide consumer fraud prevention training for the agents that are involved with these transmittals. It monitors the agent activity relating to these transmittals, and it requires them to establish a toll-free number for consumers to call to report fraud or suspected fraud. And then there is a voluntary disqualification by customers so that they can say they don't want to be solicited in this manner. There is no fiscal note, and I would stand for questions. And it has been okayed with Senator Daley to do this.
Further discussion to the A1 amendment. Senator Daley.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Bonoff. I do have to make that a qualified acceptance. I'm very supportive, as we all are, of seniors, and no one wants them to be defrauded, certainly. This bill is a very clean bill. It's five words. This amendment adds a significant amount of complexity to it. It's not as simple as the bill that I've brought forward. It hasn't gone through the committee process, as Senator Bonoff has mentioned. And I just want to say that for the record. In the end of the day, the bottom line, I am going to consider this a friendly amendment, because it is important that we do support and protect, from a consumer protection point of view, our seniors. It is going to make the process a bit more complicated, and I'm going to fight to keep it in if this does go to a conference committee, but I can't assure the body that it will make it through. That said, I'm going to fight for it. I'm going to do everything I can to retain it, because it is a good measure to protect our seniors.
Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam President. And I would just say that some advice to Senator Bonoff, because this bill did not go through the committee process here, but it's something that, again, I think that we all support in concept, but advocates and potential opponents have not had that opportunity in a committee process. So what I would encourage Senator Bonoff to be prepared that, should the House not accept this language right off, and if this amendment goes on, and if the House does not accept it, and if a conference committee is formed, that you would be prepared with testimony that could be heard in a conference committee, and then that could serve that purpose of getting out all sides so that members could feel comfortable about whether they're accepting or not of this in the conference committee. So that's my advice to Senator Bonoff.
Further discussion on the A1 amendment. Senator Bonoff renews her motion the A1 amendment be adopted to House File 2173. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on House File 2173. Secretary will give House File 2173 its third reading.
House File Number 2173, a bill for an act relating to consumer protection, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 2173. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Now under consider, we'll be taking up number 11 on general orders, House File 389, Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Madam President, is it? Under Senate File 270 is intended to balance the interests of local governments, property owners, construction workers, and neighbors. This bill will hopefully reduce risk and cost to developers and help make housing more affordable. In addition, the bill does not affect the ability of local governments to enact a moratorium at any time for virtually any reason. Further, the bill would offer builders and property owners some protection and encourage transparency by requiring public notice and public hearings before an interim ordinance is put in place. Now, counties already do this based on a court order, court decision. Finally, this is a jobs bill, members. We are trying to help Main Street contractors and home builders to pursue projects and employ laborers to assist them in building. Under this bill, a municipality would be unable to require land dedications or fees in a development contract that are not authorized by statute or mutually agreed upon by all the parties. The bill has the support of the Builders Association of the Twin Cities. Local government groups have withdrawn their objections. We've worked hard to strike a balance among the stakeholders and create good policy. I believe this bill finds that balance. This is a common sense policy that will reduce risks and costs to employers, make housing more affordable, and help create and retain jobs throughout Minnesota while ensuring the local control remains intact. I ask for your vote, and I do believe, Madam President, that Senator Nelson has an amendment.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I offer the A50 amendment.
Senator Nelson has offered the A50 amendment. The Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Nelson moves to amend House File Number 389 as amended pursuant to Rule 45 adopted by the Senate April 2nd, 2012 as follows. Page 1, delete Section 1. This is the A50 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. This amendment deletes Sections 1, 2, and 3. You will notice that those are the areas of concern, and that has to do with deleting the interim zoning and the moratorium language. So my amendment would eliminate those restrictions on local units of government from providing moratoriums or interim zoning ordinances. So that deletes the controversial part of the bill. I was hearing the same thing from my district. They were concerned that they needed to still have that tool in their toolbox, if necessary, to put on a moratorium or an interim ordinance. My amendment will allow them to keep that tool. It's been agreed upon by the townships, the counties, and the cities.
Further discussion of the A50 amendment, Senator Howell.
Members, I rise in support of Senator Nelson's amendment. I too have concerns about the local control aspect of this, and I would urge members to vote yes on this amendment.
Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this amendment does help bring the parties closer together and eliminates most opposition to the bill, so I would encourage your support of the amendment.
Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Vanderveer yield for a question?
Senator Vanderveer will yield. Senator Lurie.
Thank you, and I appreciate the amendment as well. I stand in support of the amendment, but I'm just trying to, those are the very issues I was prepared to be looking at, and I'm just curious what's left in the bill after we delete these amendments. I'm not quite up to speed with it. It appears this amendment is going to go on, but what's left of the bill then?
Senator Vanderveer.
Madam President, Senator Lurie, what's left is basically the development contracts notice requirement, I believe, and that with regards to hearings. and that park dedication fees or costs, development contracts can't require anything that's not agreed upon by both parties or in statute currently.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Vandeveer, I don't remember discussing this language in the local government committee. I think that this was maybe language that came over from the House, and it's not. So I'm wondering if you could please just give some more descriptions of sections 4 through 6.
Senator Vandeveer.
They're the same as we had in committee, Senator Sieben. They are the essentially that, if I can read them, they require that a development contract that the developer be notified, I believe 3 days before that, that the terms of the contract must be mutually agreed upon, and it can only include what's in statute currently.
Senator Lamer.
Madam President, what is the order of business now? Are we on an amendment or on the bill? Our discussion seems to be going toward the bill, and I think we should maybe stay focused on the amendment.
Thank you for the reminder, Senator Lamer. We are on the amendment, so discussion to the A50 amendment. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. This is an important amendment. It allows townships and local units of government to retain that tool they need in their toolbox when faced with uncertain developments. And so I would ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call granted. Secretary will take the roll on the A50 amendment. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 57 ayes and 6 nays, the amendment is adopted. Further discussion on House File 389. Senator Marty.
Madam President, perhaps a question for Senator Vandeveer. This provision where they cannot have anything that's not authorized by statute, any dedication or any set-asides or fees and so on authorized by statute, I mean, they can't require them to do anything that's illegal now. In other words, you're saying less specifically, unless the statute says explicitly this is the kind of set-aside that's allowed, they're not allowed to have it. In other words, for affordable housing or for parkland or any other set-aside, they can't do that unless the statute explicitly tells them they can.
Senator Vandeveer.
it's mostly what's been adopted by the courts is what my understanding is. But what this would also do is that there must be some rough proportionality between the requirements and what they're requiring to pay. So the cost that you're intended to cover as a developer, that you would have some proportionality between what the municipality required, a relationship between what they required and what you had to pay.
Senator Lori.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm looking at the same sections that Senator Marty was just asking questions about in it, and you know, making it so that a municipality can't require land dedications or fees not authorized specifically by statute. And then I guess Section 6 would be the statutory authorization to do it, but then at the end of it, it says that the requirements must be imposed by ordinance or under the procedures established in Section 462.353 sub 4A. I don't know 462.353 sub 4A, but it appears that what we're saying is that it's not based on rough proportionality, which is the standard that's been applied by courts, and that's true for a long time for dedication of streets, sewers, things like that. When a municipality is giving the go-ahead to a planned development, but saying that the requirement must be imposed by ordinance beforehand, before a municipality even has a chance to look at what a proposal is, could be still pretty onerous the way I read it. I mean, I think that we could be precluding some very, very reasonable protections for the public when developments are proposed and the municipality tasked with the job of approving it sets out to determine how that proposal, that proposed development, could fit within the vision for the community's future. And if we're precluding any dedication that isn't specifically imposed by ordinance prior to the municipality's knowledge of the proposal, I think that we might be restricting too much.
Further discussion on House File 389. Senator Vanderbeer.
I think, Madam President, and Senator Lowry, that it really does allow for that, because the mandate allows to require the city to require that developers pay for streets, drainage, and utilities, and that all it's saying is that there should be some proportionality, and they also allow them to mutually agree on other requirements.
Senator Lori.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm afraid, Senator Vanderveer, I'm going to have to disagree with you. It doesn't say that it's only rough proportionality that it's put to. It says that a municipality cannot require land dedications or fees that aren't authorized by statute. And the authorization for the dedication by statute that apparently is in this bill is the Subdivision 6 that's proposed here, and it contains an explicit requirement that they must be imposed by ordinance prior to the proposed dedication. I mean, that's the way I'm reading it. So, I mean, I'm going to have to respectfully disagree with your assessment that all that is being required is rough proportionality. And if that is all that is required, this bill is completely unnecessary, because rough proportionality is a U.S. constitutional standard that has been imposed for a very, very long time. So if rough proportionality is all that this bill does, it is completely unnecessary, and we don't really need to be standing here on the Senate floor arguing about it.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. I have a question for Senator Vanderveer. Would he yield?
Senator Vanderveer will yield. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Vanderveer, can you tell me, does this the remaining legislation here after the adoption of the amendment, can you kind of explain to me our current statutes in regard to development contracts and fees? My understanding is that current law requires that there be a nexus or some sort of connection between what the development is causing and what the local units of government may be asking for. In other words, if there's a development that has, and maybe as part of that development contract, the local unit of government said, well, we need a bike trail here, but maybe the new development has nothing to do with a bike trail. I'm just wondering, doesn't our current statute allow for dedication and ordinances, provided there's a nexus and that the cost have a rough proportionality?
Senator Vanderveer.
Madam President, Senator Nelson, that's correct. It is already acquired, and this doesn't interfere or conflict with current law.
Further discussion, Senator Marty.
Then, Madam President, Senator Vanderveer, then why do we need it if this doesn't change anything in current law? I just keep thinking of all the types of, I don't know if I'd call it development, but some might. I mean, down the situation with Winona with the fracking sand and so on. I mean, if somebody is doing some sort of development that a city doesn't want and the city wants to say, look, we're going to require, if you're going to do that, we have to put this huge buffer in here. We have to do this to mitigate other things. And if the public's going to have to live with the dust and other things from that, we want you to put in some extra parkland around it. It just strikes me that if this isn't changing anything, why do we need it? And when so many people on the floor are kind of asking what's going on here, it seems to me this should go back to committee for some more work.
Senator Vanderveer.
Madam President, it's been in committee for 2 years. I think it's had enough work. I think the issues are somewhat complicated, but I will say this, that what it, you know, what it's currently doing in Section 6 isn't necessary to the bill, and I would move to delete Section 6.
Senator Vanderveer has offered an oral amendment. Could you repeat that amendment, Senator Vanderveer?
Madam President, members, delete Section 6.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Vanderveer moves to amend House File 389 as follows, page 7, line 7.5, delete Section 6.
To the amendment, Senator Vanderveer, or to the amendment?
Thank you, Madam President. The purpose of the amendment is to delete the section that we're discussing now because it's not imperative to the bill. And that's it.
Further discussion of the amendment, Senator Lorry.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in opposition to the oral amendment. Section 6 is tied to Section 4. Section 4 says that the municipality may not require land dedication or fees that aren't authorized by statute, and Section 6 is the authorization in statute that Section 4 refers to. So, I mean, if you want to delete Section 4 as well, I mean, I could be in support of that, and then all we got left is Section 5, and I don't really know what it does, so I don't know. We can pick away at this thing until it's absolutely nothing, but at this point I would stand in opposition to the oral amendment, which strikes Section 6, which is intertwined with Section 4 and is the authorization in statute that Section 4 specifically refers to.
Further discussion to the oral amendment, Senator Vanderveer.
Well, Madam President, Senator Lowry, why would you want to allow municipalities to require disproportionate fees and not negotiate with developers? Why is that an okay place to go? I don't understand your opposition to this. That's all we're trying to do here, is to have some proportionality between what is required and worked out in these development contracts and what in a relationship between that and the cost of the city or the municipality for the development that's taking place. I don't understand why you're opposed to that.
Senator Lorry?
I guess that was a question to me. You know, I know it's been in committee for a couple of years. We did hear it last year with some of those really onerous provisions which have already been taken out. But again, Section 4 says that you can't put any of these dedications on without statutory authorization. And Section 6 that you're suggesting that we delete is the statutory authorization for that dedication. And I do not stand for the principle that what is required of municipalities ought to be something other than rough proportionality, and those are constitutional standards, takings standards that have been imposed by the courts for decades. I mean, I'm just really unclear what this bill does, and I rise in opposition to striking Section 6, which is the statutory authorization that Section 4 refers to. I don't see why that's so complicated.
Members, the language of the oral amendment is out on the system as the A51 amendment, but it is page 7, delete section 6, so it's not very involved language. Further discussion to the amendment. Roll call has been requested. A roll call granted. Secretary will take the roll on the A51 amendment.
Says it.
Madam President, could we just have some clarification? We believe this is the oral amendment to strip out Section 6.
And
is that correct?
Senator Nelson, I did say that it was the A51 amendment that's available online because it came up as the A51. This is the oral amendment. It deletes Section 6.
I don't think she is, no.
It's all gone. Bobby didn't get what was...
All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 14 ayes and 47 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on House File 389. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Vandeveer yield for a question?
Senator Vandeveer will yield. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Vandeveer, what, if anything, is left in the bill regarding restrictions on moratoriums?
Senator Vandeveer.
Madam President, Senator Sieben, nothing.
Senator Nelson. Oh, Senator Sieben, I'm sorry. We'll go back to Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Vandeveer, then, will you please explain what is left in the bill?
Senator Vandeveer.
Madam President, Senator Sieben, what's left in the bill is the public hearing when you're going to do an interim zoning, which was ordered the counties do it by the courts anyway, so this would include municipalities, and the development contracts proportionality language is left in there. It has to either conform with statute or the parties have to mutually agree on what's required, and there must be a relationship between what's required and what is agreed upon in the contract.
Further discussion, Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Vandeveer, well, how does that impact? I think like Forest Lake had a few years ago had a lawsuit or something related to public housing, to not public housing, affordable housing. How does this relate? In other words, when you may not require land dedications or fees, they're not authorized by statute. It seems to me affordable housing is authorized by statute. How does this change that? What's this? What's the point of the legislation other than to say, oh, it doesn't change much? That's not real helpful. What is it changing?
Senator Vandeveer. Mr. President, Senator Marty, that the fees must be, it wouldn't have impacted, I don't believe, I'm not an attorney, but I don't think it would impact the Forest Lake issue. But the rough proportionality requirement that the fees be related to the actual cost of the project to the municipality and that they be mutually agreed upon. And I made a mistake. The public hearing is out of it, too. So it would just be the proportionality of the fees and the requirements for the contracts that remains in the bill.
Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Vandeveer yield for one more question?
He will yield.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Vandeveer, you've gotten up a couple of times now and said that the public hearing requirement is still in here, and I'm trying to read, and maybe I'm looking at the wrong bill, but I don't believe the public hearing requirement is left in the bill. Can you clarify, and if it is still there, can you point us to where it is? Maybe it's hidden in the repealer. I don't know. I can't find it.
Senator Vandeveer.
Senator Lowry, as I said last time I stood up, it's gone. I had made a mistake previously. Yes. As I said last time when I stood up, that part is gone. We took the hearing out. It's not in there anymore.
Further discussion on House File 389. Senator Marty.
Mr. President, I'm sorry to keep asking, but I'm still, this rough proportionality you're saying, the amount of the fees has to be roughly proportional to the work to be completed by either municipality or the applicant. Well, supposing you're doing some development that's very noisy or undesired by the city or other neighbors or something, and they want to put in a big barrier around, I mean, not a barrier, but parkland or something around it, but the city's not putting in the parkland and the developer isn't, then in other words, does that mean the fee is not allowed to be done if the work is not done by the city or the applicant? In other words, I'm just trying to figure out what this language is meant to accomplish. I think Senator Lurie, I'm not an attorney, but Senator Lurie said earlier that the law already requires constitutionally you'd have to have the fees be proportional. But so what is this changing?
Did you want to ask Senator Vandeveer if
you... Mr. President, yes, if Senator Vandeveer would yield, I'm just trying to find out what is this adding in the proportionality of fees and the not requiring the land dedications or fees. I mean, obviously they can't do anything that's prohibited by statute, but something that's not authorized. What is it changing? Could you respond? I mean, give me an example of what it changes.
Senator Vandiver.
Senator Marty, it changes the... It's designed to reduce court cases, because there are a lot of court cases come up, we're told, about this issue, because municipalities will tend to require more and more and makes the development impractical and changes the rules of the game. What this is designed to do, really, is to protect people that come in, that play by the rules, that develop a proposal based on current law at the time that they come in for the application, and that application at least... if it's approved, that it have some proportionality as to what's being required to be donated for parks or straight to the city in a development contract between what it's going to cost the city to do the development and the cost of the improvements. So that's what this is designed to do, and it's to provide some surety to contractors that, or to project
listen.
Managers that,
just listen.
That their work will not be stopped arbitrarily.
Mr. President?
Senator Higgins.
Senator Vandiver, I don't think most of us heard whatever that was you just said, because your mouth and your microphone were about 18 inches apart. Could you try it again with the microphone, please?
Further discussion, Senator... Senator Vandiver, Senator Higgins would like to hear your response.
Mr. President, what was the question?
Senator Higgins.
Mr. President, Senator Vandiver, the longer you talked, the more your microphone went farther away from your mouth, to the point where we couldn't hear what you were saying. So the last thing, whatever that was you were explaining to Senator Marty, most of us couldn't hear it.
Mr. President,
and I'd like to know what it was, because I'm interested in this issue.
Mr. President, Senator Higgins, I ask the question be repeated then.
Senator Marty, would you repeat your question?
Mr. President, yes. Senator Vandiver, what I was interested in knowing is how this changes law. If you could give an example, and an example of how this would change a development if I come in with a project, a housing project or industrial project or whatever, how it would change how the city or whomever would respond to me. What would they not be able to do that they're able to do now, or what changes in terms of what they can require? I would like an example of what's different.
Senator Vandiver.
It's pretty simple. The reason for the bill is because cities don't always follow the law, and developers have to sue the cities to enforce their rights. This would provide, hopefully, less court cases, because it clarifies that the development requirements of the city, that those requirements be proportional to the cost of the improvements. I don't know what's confusing about that, but that those requirements be proportional. So if you require streets, you can still require streets, sewer, utilities, right away. If you make those requirements, that there be some relationship between that and the costs imposed by the development.
Further discussion on House File 389. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Vandiver, in other words, though, you're saying that if the developer comes in with what, and there's nothing in existing city ordinance or whatever that requires, say, parkland dedication, they cannot put that in after the project comes up, even though the project may be it may fit into the area, but it may be much noisier, much dirtier, much less attractive to the city, to the community as a whole. They could not put in a park dedication requirement that they didn't have ahead of time. I just keep thinking the news stories about Winona recently with the big sand piles and the dust and everything else from them. Apparently they're not violating any local ordinances, but clearly if the city knows somebody's going to come in with a proposal, they might want to put other restrictions on, because it's not for the good of the city if somebody puts in something that they feel is inappropriate. So, in effect, what you're saying is they cannot add other things if they feel a development would require it if they were not explicitly in the city policies ahead of time.
Senator Vanderveer.
Mr. President and Senator Marty, what you said was that the development caused some problems, and if the city tried to address them, yes, they could, under this bill, address them.
Further discussion on House File 389, Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd urge members to vote no for this stripped-down version of the bill. We haven't had the opportunity to hear from cities and townships clearly on whether they're still opposed to the bill, but as you'll see from the handout that I distributed on the floor, county commissioners from all over the state were opposed to the bill. Townships, when forced, said that they were not opposed, but yet they still supported the current law. So I would encourage members to vote no to keep current law working fine for our local units of government and for local control.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam or Mr. President. Members, I don't know if you've been really following along on this bill. This was a bill that was very similar to one I had last year. It's greatly reduced from the provisions that I had in a bill. However, the fact remains that there are times when developers will get an approval for something they want to build in a city. And as they go forward in building whatever they've gotten their approval for, lo and behold, a city comes along and changes the rules in the middle of the game. Oftentimes, the contractor has to go to the city, or go to the courts, spending even more money out of their pocket to fight City Hall. City Hall seems to have more than one bite at the apple when they're trying to approve a development, and they will impose that authority in the middle of a development at a great cost to not only the builder or the contractor, but ultimately at the whatever product the builder is building at the cost of a consumer. This is simply putting a restriction on the cities that say, once you approve it, it's approved. And that you can't keep going back and imposing more and more restrictions in the middle of the game. That's extremely costly to a contractor, and it's, in light of the bad real estate economy, it could be a death knell to a contractor. This simply recognizes that, yes, the contractor wants to work with the government, they want to get their project approved, and go about their business building it. They can't keep coming back and putting on more and more restrictions onto a contractor as the project continues.
Further discussion on House File 389. Seeing none, Secretary will give it its third reading.
House File Number 389, a bill for an act relating to local government, third reading.
Further discussion. Seeing none, Secretary will take the roll. All senators voting who desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 33 ayes and 31 nays, the bill fails to pass. Moving on to number 99, House File 1992, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I believe almost, if not all of us, have heard House File 1992 in committees. It's traveled through several. It is the Motor Carrier Contract Indemnity Bill. What it does is it would encourage free competition among shippers. These are the Minnesota truckers that are small businesses across the state. And members, they are at a competitive disadvantage across the country. You'll see a map. In the states that are in the middle color, the middle gray, those states have passed the indemnity provisions or similar provisions that are before you in the bill, House File 1992. What it does is it voids against public policy any contract that would require the shipper to carry indemnity insurance for the promisee or the company that has contracted with them to ship. And what we don't want, members, is for one business party to have to carry the risk of negligence for the other party. We want all Minnesotans to bear some risk for their own acts of negligence, because otherwise the cost for insurance for everyone goes up. This is good business practice. Members, I can tell you that the House passed this provision 128-0 yesterday, and I ask for your bipartisan support for this provision. I would answer any questions that you have, but this is about asking all those that have business in Minnesota to carry their own risk of loss.
Further discussion on House File 1992, Senator Latz.
Mr. President, will Senator Ortman yield for a question?
She will yield.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Ortman, I think this is a good piece of legislation, and I think it's appropriate that parties not be able to shift their own negligence or risk on to other parties as this bill prohibits. But I just want to make sure that we get a clear sense for the record of the scope of these provisions. I want to make sure, for example, that this legislation will not impact any third party that might be injured along the way in the process.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. President and Senator Latz, that's correct. This does not impact in any way the third party's risk of liability or requirements to carry insurance coverage.
Senator Latz.
And Mr. President, Senator Ortman, so in fact, are the shippers and brokers still required to carry insurance for those kind of third party losses?
Senator Ortman.
That's correct, Mr. President.
Senator Latz.
Mr. President and Senator Ortman, then this type of contracts that this legislation would address are broker agreements, shippers agreements, motor carrier agreements. Is that right?
Senator Ortman.
The business-to-business agreements that are involved in these transactions.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. President, and to Senator Latz, can you just restate the first part of your question?
Senator Latz.
Sure. Mr. President, Senator Ortman, so this legislation would specifically address contracts such as broker agreements, shippers agreements, and motor carrier agreements. Is that right?
Senator Ortman.
That's correct, Mr. President and Senator Latz. I hope to have your support for this bill.
Senator Latz.
Mr. President and Senator Ortman, you do have my support for this bill. I think it's appropriate that we not allow parties to shift the responsibility for their own negligence onto other parties. I do want to point out that such is not the case in a lot of other contexts, that there are business providers, for example, that are allowed and in fact do, as a matter of course, shift the risk of their own negligence, the business's negligence, onto consumers who are using their products or services I want to give you, for an example, the Grand Rio Cinder Water Park Resort. Their specific waiver of liability requires that when you go there to use the park as a family, you sign an agreement that you agree not to sue Grand Rios, even for Grand Rios's own negligence or the negligence of their staff, their employees, for failure to properly train them, for example. You have no recourse if you get injured as a customer. A similar waiver is present at Welch Village Ski Area, at Lutzen Mountains Ski Area, at Lifetime Fitness Vertical Endeavors in Duluth, for example, at the Water Park of America. If you use any of these facilities as a consumer, you are giving up your rights to sue them. Essentially, those service providers are transferring their risk of their own negligence onto the consumer. So while I agree with the direction and the scope of the bill that we have before us, I think, frankly, what's good for the goose ought to be good for the gander, and I look forward next year perhaps to taking a look at prohibiting these kinds of liability waivers or indemnification contracts in context in addition to just the motor carrier context. Thank you.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Latz and Senator Ortman have discussed the particulars of the bill, but I just wanted to rise to support Senator Ortman's initiative here. I think this is important, particularly for the trucking industry, and urge your support.
Further discussion on House File 1992. Secretary will give House File 1992, its third reading.
House File number 1992, a bill for an act relating to transportation, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 1992. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving to today's Senate agenda addendum, we'll take up the third order of business, messages from the House. The secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of three members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House for the following Senate file. Senate file number 1528, a bill for an act relating to education. There has been appointed a such committee on the part of the House, Myra Biskins and Pulowski. Senate file number 1528 is herewith returned to the Senate. Albert A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. The Secretary will read the next message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House has acceded to the request of the Senate for the appointment of a conference committee consisting of five members of the House on the amendments adopted by the House of the following Senate file. Senate file 2392, a bill for an act relating to liquor. There's been appointed to such committee on the part of the House, Atkins, Anderson S., Hoppy, Sanders, and Lilly. Senate file number 2392 is herewith returned to the Senate. Albert E. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. Secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce that the House refuses to concur in the Senate amendments to House File Number 2244. House File 2244, a bill for an act relating to the Permanent School Fund. The House respectfully requests that a conference committee of five members be appointed thereon. O'Driscoll, McElfatrick, McNamara, Dietrich, and Simon have been appointed as such committee on the part of the House. House File Number 2224 is herewith transmitted to the Senate with a request that the Senate appoint a like committee. Albert A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
Senator Cruz.
Madam President, I move that the Senate accede to the request of the House for a conference committee on House File Number 2244 and that a conference committee of five members be appointed by the Subcommittee on Conference Committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
To that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the fifth order of business on today's Senate agenda addendum, reports of committee, Senator Senchum.
Madam President, I move that committee reports be adopted with the exception of the reports pertaining to appointments.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Senchum.
Madam President, I move that the reports pertaining to the appointments be laid on the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. On the sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills, there are several printed on page 3 of the addendum. Second reading. Moving to announcements of Senate interest. Senator Senchum.
Thank you, Madam President. I just might note for the benefit of all here, a member's colleague, colleague's wife, rather, Senator Langston's wife, as some of you know, had surgery, I believe it was Sunday night, and I just talked to Senator Langston, and she's doing well, and so we all, I think, share our thoughts and prayers with Senator Langston, and certainly his wife, Lorraine, and hope for a speedy recovery. And unless there are no other announcements, Madam President, I would move that we adjourn until Wednesday, April 4th at 11 o'clock.
Senator Senchum, before that, I have several excuses. Without objection, the following members will be excused. Senator Langseth, all day. Senator Reinert, all day. Senator Torres-Ray, 11 to 11:45. Senator Gerlach from 11 to 11:40. Senator Gimsey from 11:10 to 11:30. Senator Olson to 12:15. Till the end of session. Senator Rest from 12:15 to 12:40. Senator Cruz from 11:20 to 11:50. Senator Carlson from 11:45 to 12 noon. Senator Ingebrigtsen from 11:35 to 11:40. Without objection, they are excused. Senator Senchum renews his motion that we adjourn until Wednesday, April 4th at 11 o'clock. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. We are adjourned.